This is the OANDA podcast, brought to you by Jazz FM's Business Breakfast.
Welcome to another OANDA Market Insights podcast, brought to you by Jazz FM's Business Breakfast team. The whole series is available on iTunes and wherever else you find your podcasts, as well as online. I'm Nick Howard, sitting in for Johnny Hart this morning on what's been another tumultuous week.
The elected representatives in this country are getting on with the job and delivering on the will of the British people.
The European Union has been particularly tough on the United States. They make it almost impossible for us to do business with them.
I mean, this is an absolute farce.
We would see it as chaos at the borders. Our parts move across the borders, sometimes up to two or three times.
That does not make the Treasury, on my watch, the enemy of Brexit.
Well, joining me in the studio from OANDA is market analyst Craig Earlham, and down the line from Singapore, Stephen Innes, head of trading Asia there. Good morning to you both, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's kick off, if we may, with Brexit. I know we say this pretty much every week. Craig, there's been plenty of things going on throughout the week, but just in the last really few hours today, we've heard about Airbus threatening to pull out of the UK if there is a no-deal Brexit. It's put the cat among the pigeons, but is there any substance to what they're saying?
No, it's entirely scaremongering, I'd say. Like every other piece of bad news in relation to Brexit, it is. We can't take things for what they are. We can't listen to news for what it is. We have to pick a side, and then that will determine our views, it would seem. I think we have to take something like this quite seriously. There is a lot of jobs at stake, and we are hearing now repeated warnings.
Let's put that in perspective. So 14,000 UK jobs in the supply chain, and also, let's not forget the tax bill. Airbus alone, £1.7 billion a year.
Yeah, 1,400 jobs directly. It's 100,000 jobs, if I'm not mistaken, throughout the entire supply chain in the UK. So this is, we're not talking a small amount of labour that's included in this, and should it be shipped. And let's not skirt around this. These are very straightforward warnings about some very real concerns that Airbus does have. So we have to take this seriously, and we have to also remember Airbus is not the only company who are going to be sharing these concerns. So this is just one example of this, but they are being very, very clear in their warnings to the UK. They are being very, very clear about the fact, they actually said it themselves, this is not a case of scaremongering. This is very much a case of, we are telling you what you may or may not want to know, but we are giving you a pre-warning because we don't want to be sat here in 12 months' time moving jobs being asked, where was the warning? Why weren't you being open and honest with us? And I think people are going to be sceptical, naturally, because there is European interest in Airbus, and is this more of a political vehicle to put pressure on the UK government? However, I think we have to realise now that we are entering the business end of these negotiations. We're not really clear on what the relationship is going to look like. We're not even clear on what the Northern Ireland border is going to look like. And we're only months away. We need to see some significant steps forward here. Otherwise, more businesses like Airbus, and then a lot of the focus, I think we've got to remember, has been on the financial services industry, and there's many, many more industries that are equally concerned. They are going to start putting contingency plans in place and start looking elsewhere and start moving elsewhere.
Last night, the Chancellor, Philip Hammond, gave his annual speech to the city at Mansion House. The focus was on what that deal may look like for finance after Brexit, the difference between equivalence and mutual recognition. Even saying it, no one wins votes on these things. No one swings referendums on these terms. But basically, the rules that govern the financial market, whether under mutual recognition you have two separate systems that get you to the same place, or equivalence, where the EU system would override the British banking system. Obviously, this is a febrile topic for UK banking and UK financial services. The Chancellor coming forward saying that he's come down on the side of rules for the UK being controlled by UK bodies like the Bank of England. I'm actually going to come to you on this one, Steve, because one of the other things that he was describing was actually how this could benefit deals with other financial sectors, including, of course, Singapore.
Yeah, I think this is a big positive in the sense that we look at the growth in the region, in the local emerging market countries, it's just phenomenal, both from an economic situation and also from a financial situation as these countries get wealthier. So what that would mean is there's going to be more necessity for, you know, financial expertise. Now, Singapore has a big base in the banking sector right now. As a matter of fact, for foreign exchange trading, it's the largest center over in Asia now. It's supplanted Tokyo several years ago. So there's a lot of exchange getting traded here. But where I think the benefit would be is when China starts to open up the markets more freely and allows more financial center, more foreign financial presence in the mainland. The thought is that Singapore and Hong Kong are going to continue to compete for this business. Right now, the notion that Hong Kong is the gateway to China is very much there. And, Singapore is their weaker brother, so to speak. However, I think if we got the boost from highly sophisticated UK bankers moving into Singapore, and trust me, Singapore would welcome them with open arms. I think this could be serious competition for Hong Kong and for the British banking community alone. This place is booming. So, you know, if you want to get over here, I think the time is right. So this could be a carrot to dangle in front of the EU's face after trying to railroad into a tough deal.
Craig, do you agree?
I completely agree with everything you're saying. So, but what it's obviously always interesting to get the perspective from Singapore as well. Steve, would you say then that post-Brexit, you see, if I'm not mistaken, what you're saying is you see that other economies like Singapore, etc., are going to see the biggest benefit of Brexit rather than institutions necessarily just pouring into the EU instead? And what impact do you think it will have on London as a global financial centre?
Well, I think more or less what I was referring to, if passporting rights are getting dealt a blow over London and into the European community, then obviously the bigger banking sectors that are dealing with mergers and acquisitions, IPOs and stuff, would start to lose a great deal of business in Europe, and they would have to sort of supplant and look for business outside of Europe. And that's what I'm suggesting, Craig, is that there's lots to be had here, more so in China. China is one huge, colossal financial market just waiting to get tapped. You already see the European banks coming in here, tripping over themselves to get in, just like the U.S. banks. So I think this is what I'm really trying to say. I'm not trying to say, you know, it's going to benefit from Brexit, this area. What I'm trying to say here is the U.K. banks can definitely benefit by having tighter relations and bigger presence over in this part of the world, as opposed to being, you know, more focused on Europe.
There's plenty more to speak about that's been going on throughout the week and ahead. Let's move on to tariffs, which the US at the beginning of the week added another $200 billion worth of tariffs on Chinese goods. And now, just today, the EU has launched its policy of tariffs on US goods coming into the EU. Now, obviously, the Asian time zone will be the most affected by these. What kind of impact is it actually having already?
Well, we're starting to see just about everybody looking and reviewing, all the way from airlines, cargo, especially anything related with exports, are really under stress right now. And as you've seen the markets in general this week, the equity markets have been in the tanks, outside of a little bump in the tech sector thanks to the FANGs in the US that have been sort of lending support. The markets are not doing very well. I think one of the takeaways I took from this week is just how quick and how sudden things can change. I mean, Monday morning we're talking about, you know, the World Cup, and all of a sudden the headline comes down the terminal and, markets just went into complete meltdown. Now, the interesting fact here, I mean, I still see this at the tit-for-tat level. I don't think it's going to blow into a global full-blown trade war. I think there's going to have to be some concessions on both sides of the equation. But where it stands right now is we came out of a period where investors were very complacent about trade war. And, you know, they seem to be viewing it more that it's going to get done. Now we're into this hypersensitivity of perhaps trade war will move to a full-blown trade war. And I think this is what's causing more pain in the markets, switching from complacency now to utter fear. And I think that's the problem.
Well, what about the game theory, Craig? So this week, obviously, we've seen the tariffs we're talking about. Next week, there are more coming down the pipe. India, Canada, Brazil coming into play. It certainly feels like something of a global trade war, at least burgeoning. But who will blink first?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what you said is completely true there. It feels like a trade war, but I think at the moment it's more of a trade scuffle, including many, many countries. And all you hear about is the US, the EU and China. But as you've just so rightly mentioned, there are other people involved in this as well. And it does almost feel like it's the US versus the world. And this is why I think, to an extent, I agree with Steve in that I don't think this is going to envelop into a full-blown trade war. Simple reason being, I think the US may have picked a fight with just too many people and therefore probably stands more to lose than anyone else.
The issue with that is that Trump is not one to back down from a fight.
He's not. But then if the market starts slipping, that's where his weakness is. He's identified other countries' weakness quite clearly. This is what he does. He looks for a weak point and he piles as much pressure on it as he can. Well, Trump's weak point is financial markets. There's a reason why he tweets so much about the financial markets, so much about the economy. If you start to see an impact on the economy and you start to see an impact on the financial markets heading into midterm elections, then you will see, you would hope, start to see a change in tact from Trump. I think his ultimate target is China, and this is what surprises me. I think it's things like intellectual property theft, which is what's most bothered him. I think he's utilizing what he's doing right now in order to try and score many victories. And I think he may have bitten off more than he can chew at this point. And with the fact that all of these countries now are coming back and imposing counter tariffs, I just don't see how continuing to escalate this benefits him. We have to remember, so far, as Steve noted, the size of the tariffs which have been imposed are quite small. He's threatening much, much larger tariffs in response. And no country at this point seems to be backing down. Everyone stands to lose. That's quite normal in a trade war. The question is, as you say, who's going to blink first? You've got to hope some common sense prevails. But I think it's also interesting that the EU, like China, they are far more targeted in their retaliatory tariffs. The value isn't necessarily the same as the US, but it could be politically much more devastating, targeting swing states like Florida, targeting key industries in the likes of Tennessee, where you know that there is a supporter base for Trump. If these bases start getting picked apart by different countries, China, the EU, India, etc., and you see this reflected in the midterms and the Republicans don't secure that majority in the House and the Senate, then you will see an awful lot more political pressure on Trump by the Republicans, because he is doing more damage than good for them. So far, he's actually done them a lot of good. Tax reforms, some people may not agree with it, but that is something that Republicans have been pushing for years, and their core supporter base will appreciate that. If you start hitting their core supporter base and you start seeing people losing seats, that's where Trump's weakness lies.
Tariffs are just one part of the trade puzzle of the international economy, and admittedly one which has decreased in recent decades. Another piece which is potentially going to hand Trump a victory just today on the negotiations taking place in OPEC. They're looking as though they are going to increase supply, pushing down prices, potentially at the behest of Trump. Certainly he's been putting the pressure on. Is this something we are likely to see? It is a febrile alliance right now.
It's pretty interesting how they listen to Trump. And I think there is some decent cause here, him coming out. I think the end users ultimately are suffering by the rapid increase of oil. And it really boils down to OPEC's compliance and the huge amounts of imports required from China, India, and the rest of Asia that are just making this making the markets push higher. What we've seen today, we've seen in a preliminary agreement to increase production theoretically by about 1 million barrels per day, but still lower than the 1.5 million that they took out. So the markets are still trending a little bit higher. But we have to remember about oil prices is that we are only one supply shock away from them moving up another $5 to $7 per barrel. And this is the unfortunate thing right now, is that the supply and demand equation are so finely balanced, any supply shock, prices will go up again. So a couple of takes I have from this OPEC meeting is one, outside of Iran, the compliance is very solid. And I think that's a good thing. And I think that's why the markets are reacting fairly positively on oil prices right now. They're trading higher on that note. And, you know, I think what we probably see going forward is a more gradual approach, in the sense that they'll, you know, bring on more supply as prices shoot higher. So I think price is as important as what the supply and demand equation is for this compliance. And that's sort of the view that I'm going to run with for the next 6 to 12 months on oil prices.
Craig, I'm going to move you now to the Bank of England, which this week voted 6-3 to hold rates. But there was a sense within the group that that might not be the case for the rest of the year. I know you in the past have predicted that November will be the time when the interest rates go up. Are you holding to that?
I would say that November makes the most sense. I'm not necessarily convinced yet that it will be November. The main reason being that the Bank of England was very keen to go in May. It made it perfectly clear that it wanted to go in May, and the first quarter shock put them off. And the amount of backlash that they got as a result of changing their tack last minute, the amount of questions about, are you reliable? Are you the unreliable boyfriend, etc., etc.? I do think this is bothering the Bank of England right now. So they now, I think, may want to be seen to be not the unreliable boyfriend, but just the cautious boyfriend. And the fact that there's this vote, and this is something I think I alluded to prior to the actual announcement itself, we had to be cautious about the fact that the Bank of England may decide that it wants to go in August, irrespective of the fact that 3 months doesn't change anything from a rate hike perspective, but it does from a Brexit perspective, which is something that the Bank of England has to be wary of. They may decide, I'm going to choose reliability over what necessarily makes sense. And my inkling right now is that this vote was a nod towards August, that we are going to raise interest rates in August because we are the reliable boyfriend.
The question is always whether it's a optimistic vote about the UK economy, or ammunition in the bank, to mix a metaphor there, about potential shocks and problems in the future. Steve, obviously we're a little close to judge these things, but you're slightly further away. What does the UK economy actually look like from afar right now?
Well, you know, we tend to focus on what the Bank of England's views are. I think obviously the weaker pound has helped a lot of the base part of the economy come back. I think what really has to get cemented here is we have to get through this Brexit noise. The Brexit noise is just continuing to keep investments running lower. And this is a real problem here, where there's great uncertainty from a CAPEX perspective, a capital expenditure perspective for companies to start ramping up. So obviously at the really fundamental base here, what drives companies, what makes companies stronger, is investment. The lack thereof is probably holding the economy back. I think this is why, you know, when I view the Bank of England, well, pretty much as I view every central bank outside of the U.S. right now, are complete doves. Simply, they need confirmation from data. So they're going to be ultimately data dependent, along with the Bank of England has to remain extremely cautious on Brexit. This is one thing that's going to continue keeping them in the dove camp. Unless we can progress through this, get the investment, get the CAPEX cycles going back up again, I think this is going to be a lingering problem for some time to come.
And Craig, let's move to the Eurozone. Today we've had decent PMIs. They've beaten expectations across the major economies of Europe. Earlier in the week, we saw Macron and Merkel talking about their plans to potentially strengthen the Eurozone itself. Now, Obviously, that's easier said than done. But are you confident about where the Eurozone is heading at the moment?
I am, actually. I'm at least in the near term, I'm relatively optimistic. I think there are so many challenges. There's always challenges, especially in the Euro bloc. We've got the fact that Merkel is looking a little bit weak right now. I think it's something that she will survive personally, but she is still looking a bit weak. Macron is doing great things on the global stage. He's very much a Europhile, and I think that's something that Merkel has long needed, a very strong Euro-focused ally. But at home, he's facing a lot of opposition to his reforms. Italy is a concern. They keep reminding us that they're very pro-Euro, but they're sending little undercurrent messages, which are a concern to me. And it's something which, again, anyone could have anticipated before they were talking. I think it was today, one of their ministers mentioning that if they had control of their own monetary policy, then Italy would be in a much better place. But it's fine but it's fine because we're happy in the euro. And it's like, next, what's the next message? If we had control of our own fiscal policy, we could expand the economy. But it's fine because we're happy in the euro, etc., etc. The list could quite easily go on. There's a number of risks to the euro area economy. There's a lot to be optimistic about. The services PMIs today, for example, were a lot more positive. They suggested that we are seeing higher levels of employment, that wage growth is growing, although it is in pockets of the economy. You can imagine pretty much where that is. The manufacturing sector was facing a little bit more difficulty. And again, it doesn't take... you can just listen to anyone in this show to work out where that is. Trade wars do tend to worry manufacturers, especially big exporters. And the higher price of oil, as we've already touched on, is having inflationary impact. I think overall we are heading in the right direction. There's going to be speed bumps along the way, but I'm a cautious optimist. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable right now. Briefly, obviously we saw major announcements from Greece actually today, potentially the end of the financial crisis. At least it was billed that way. But to be honest, an additional loan to pay off previous loans seems to me more kicking things down the road.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm more relieved that this is coming to an end and they're going to regain some control. I think the people of Greece are extremely frustrated still. They feel a lot poorer than they did do beforehand. I believe I saw a stat today. I think the economy is 25% smaller than it was at the start of this crisis, which tells you everything you need to know. They may be in a much structurally, fundamentally better position going forward, but there's so much more work to be done to get them back to a place where people feel happy. They've probably lost a generation of young brains who have looked elsewhere for opportunities and jobs and have no intention of going back. I think the economy has a lot more to do. I am very relieved that they have brought this bailout program to an end and they've got through the other end, but they are certainly not unscathed. Debt of around 170% of GDP. There's such a long way to go, and I really hope for them that they can push forward from now.
In a moment, I'll be asking you both what you're looking ahead to in the week to come. But, Craig, I understand that Johnny has a habit of asking you for your moment of the week, your market moment. What have you got for me?
I mean, I think, without meaning to reiterate, the trade component is going to have to be again. We started at the beginning of the week with the US imposing, announcing their tariffs from the 6th of July on China. China announcing one back, that's the world's two largest economies. Let's not take that with a pinch of salt. That's very significant. And the US threatening 200 billion more and maybe 200 billion more after that just to double down and double down again. And we've ended it with the EU imposing tariffs on the US and India et al. Proposing more. If that's not your market moment of the week, which has driven down equity markets and pushed traders towards safe havens, then I don't know what else is.
Steve, what are you looking ahead to next week?
Well, we've got a couple of regional concerns that we're going to be keeping an eye on. Thursday, we'll have the RBNZ rate hike. That's in New Zealand. But I think the big point I'll be looking at from the currency market perspective is going to be U.S. final GDP. I think this could further confirm the Fed's hawkish view. And I think this will probably, if it does, we'll probably see interest rates continue to rise from the 10 to 30-year level in U.S. bond market. And I think this backdrop would further support the U.S. dollar. markets very, very much contingent on data. Data is really driving the markets, as we could see from the reaction on the euro today when we had the surprise. So I think the data points are going to be the key, and the GDP is the one that I'm going to be focusing on.
And Craig, what about here domestically? What are you in the mood for next week?
Yeah, I mean, I think Steve's covered most of that there. And I think when he said rate hike from the RBNZ, I think he means rate decision, because I'm not aware of anything being fully baked in.
Sorry, Steve. Yes. Thanks, Craig. Thanks for correcting me.
Just to save you there. Yeah. But yeah, I think domestically, like I say, a lot of the same focus, well, a couple of data points, but it's got to be the Brexit negotiations now over the next week or so, which are going to come into the fold. And again, this trade scuffle isn't going away. I think there's going to be plenty more news on that. And so keep a very close eye on Trump's Twitter.
Nice one. And of course, that EU summit taking place on Thursday of next week. Definitely one in my calendar. Gentlemen, thank you very much both indeed. Always a pleasure to speak to you. You can, of course, catch up with more of this series and subscribe so you never miss a market moment online on iTunes or other podcast providers. You can just search for Oanda Market Insights. I'm Nick Howard. Have a delightful weekend.
Was the Oanda podcast from the team behind Jazz FM's Business Breakfast, a daily early morning 30-minute briefing for the day ahead. On air from 6 a.m. Listen to Jazz FM on DAB, online, or just ask Alexa.